kinetic operations in charge of the civilian control in the department. As I say, in a Latin American country, we'd say this is ill-advised.
Now, I think General Flynn will be with Trump today as he gets briefed. He doesn't need approval. He's one of the ones who pushed the idea of the child sex trafficking ring that he said Hillary Clinton was involved with and that she had declared war on the Catholic Church. We just have 15 seconds.
Yeah, General Flynn is not unusual. Because we've had Colin Powell, Brent Scowcroft as national security advisors. Not unusual to have a military person. He just seems temperamentally ill-suited to a job, which is to arrange the options for the president and give a relatively neutral array of choices to the commander-in-chief.
We'll leave it there. Gordon Adams, professor emeritus at American University's School of International Service, distinguished fellow at the Stimson Center. His latest book, Mission Creep. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
KVU Community Radio holds an open meeting concerning the operations and programming of KVU in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KVU Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be conducted at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, unless otherwise noted. The Program Advisory Committee meets the second Tuesday of each month at 6 p.m. Please call 503-231-8032 to verify if a meeting is being held. To request notice of board meetings in writing, please email Monica at kbu.org.
KVU Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the first annual David Bowie Memorial Bike Ride on his birthday, Sunday, January 8th. Come ride your bike around Portland with Diablo as we celebrate the life and music of David Bowie with a mobile dance party and sing-along. Again, that's the first annual David Bowie Memorial Bike Ride on January 8th at 3 p.m. at the Bowie Bike Lane at the corner of Southwest Broadway and Main in downtown Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Grendel's, a neighborhood coffee house offering locally roasted coffee, sandwiches for breakfast and lunch, and Wi-Fi. Proud to support KBOO, Grendel's is open every day at East Burnside and 8th. Information at 503-595-9550 or facebook.com/Grendel's Coffee House.
What would you have instead?
This is it.
There comes a time when every second, every day, when every action, every thought will tell the world. Cast your vote.
Great big colleagues, and we say thank you with the Alfred Crutcher.
Great big colleagues, and we say thank you.
And good morning, good morning. You are listening to KABU, your very own community radio station. It's 8:05 in the morning. You're listening to KABU, Portland, KBOO. And I'm Ani.
I'm Lynn.
And together we are Positively Revolting, as always. We thank you for joining us.
Chilly, but positively revolting.
Yes, in fact, very, very chilly. In just a few minutes, we will be talking with Linda Tirado, author of Hand to Mouth, Living in Bootstrap America. But and we'll be talking about resistance, and we'll be talking about class, and we'll be talking about that selection of Trump, which leads me to sort of looking at an overview of this month. Lynn and I were speaking about how, well, the selection is happening. The selection happened, and the seating, the enthronement, happens in a couple of weeks. And so we'll be looking this month, every Friday morning, at resistance and how we are, in fact, needing to step up the game and really look at resisting fascism in our country. Isn't that what we said?
Well, we did say that. And I think in many ways, people, I've heard people who have never talked about activism before, sometimes they don't kind of know what that is. It was like, well, we thought we'd give more to the ACLU. Not that that's not a good thing. It's that I said, well, it's time for kind of boots on the ground. And other people are more interested in putting their bodies on the line and doing things. Hitting the ground running. I really liked how the Republicans tried to do away with the Ethics Committee, as well they would. That's not like shocking. Oversight. It wasn't the whole Ethics Committee. It was the oversight.
Right.
And people called. I mean,
there was
it was a huge outpouring, and it kind of surprised them, and they stepped back. And I hope that's a harbinger of things to come.
Do you suppose that they were doing that, on a holiday weekend, late at
it's the
night,
usual, yeah.
Behind closed doors? Do you think that they were doing that because they didn't think anyone would notice?
Uh huh.
And they didn't, so they didn't actually think they'd have any pushback, but then in fact. I love the fact that I was actually informed about this as I was going through my day and just sort of, you know, I'm busy. There's stuff. There's all manner of things. I hadn't looked at the news that day. I have a friend in England who messaged me and said, what is this? Like, is there no shame in your country? And I looked and I just sort of thought,
not an ounce.
Initially, I thought, let's check it out and see if it's satire. You know, because one hopes. But I just had to admit, no, our politics are farcical at this point. And, you know, so what can we do as people to actually regain, maybe gain, control of democratic processes in this country?
Right. Well, you know, I am often cynical about the, let's sign this petition on Facebook or are calling in, but apparently that really worked.
Apparently it does. And
I smacked my lips here, but yes. So
Public outcry good, mm-hmm. when things are outlandish. And I'm actually a little stunned. Maybe I've grown too cynical over the last several years. But I am a little stunned that they reversed that.
Well, but you know, they can once again, some dark and stormy night, decide to...
Oh, the next holiday weekend.
Yeah. They can try it again.
And maybe they've learned how to keep it a little more quiet this time. Of course, next weekend we're seeing all manner of actions around town. Well, actually, we're seeing all manner of preparations for actions around town. There's Stand Together. There's the first 100 days. We can get some details for those a little bit later on. But it is a time actually to become active and to stay active until we see something
that is
makes
our theme
a difference.
This month. Yes.
And so, however that looks to you, doing something a little bit more than you've done in the past, pushing comfort zones, challenging fascism. It is our new way, right? That's what we have to say about that. And now we welcome Linda Tirado to the air. Good morning, Linda. Let's try that again. It was such, there was a little fanfare there. There was, it was kind of beautiful. Good morning, Linda. All right.
Well, we'll just wait a while, see what happens.
Yeah, it'll be right around. Mm-hmm. To let folks know, coming up at 9 o'clock on KBOO, there's perhaps a scooch of technical difficulty. We'll be having Linda back on any minute now. Mm-hmm. So coming up this morning on KBOO at 9 o'clock, we'll have Peace Talk Radio, special covering of neuroscience of peacemaking, how meditative practices help school kids, and the humanitarian work of Doctors Without Borders, racial justice, and oh so much more, packed into just 1 hour. Then at 10 o'clock, Chris Andre is hosting Air Cascadia. Headlines, interviews, and commentary coming in from the frozen east. She comes in to deliver. Yes. 15 minutes of action-packed
breaking
radio.
Out that ice for the horses to drink and...
I tell you, I was hearing stories yesterday about life on a farm when it's sub-freezing for days on end.
And out there, it is so windy.
Anyways, he's like, oh, I am so glad at this moment of my life I don't live on a farm. At 10:15, it's Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein. Flashpoints and Dennis Bernstein. I love Dennis Bernstein. At 11 o'clock, a Radio Geekly continues its series on gatekeeping. This week, the oppression of the LGBTQ community in geek culture. I have to say, it's one of my favorite shows. It started rather recently, a Radio Geekly. But as somebody who, in fact, is a geek and does spend much of my free time... not as much as I'd like to, thereby marking me as a true geek, gaming and reading comics. Yeah. Radio Geekly, 11 o'clock, looking at the culture of geekdom and actually looking at it through a social justice lens, which is way cool. We also want to thank everyone for becoming KBOO members and for your generous support throughout 2016. If, in fact, you have not been one of those to generously support us in 2016, you can take care of that by going to KBOOFM and clicking on Donate.
We all know we want to make 2017 a better year, and that's a good way to start.
It is. Mm-hmm. An act of empowerment, mm-hmm. straight out of the gate. And let's try this again. Good morning, Linda. Oh, so close.
Good morning, Linda.
With this, we can sort of move on for a moment.
For a moment.
And say, we've heard so much about reasons why Trump made it into office. And if you look past the absolute corruption, the possible hackings, the vote theft, all of that. If you look past all of those machinations that actually probably did it, we have seen for some time a blame being put on the working class. And I have to say, I'm against it. I firmly believe that the working class did not go out and stampede to elect Trump. And that is, in fact, what we are hoping to engage Linda Tirado in conversation about this very morning. I also want to invite you.
I can hear her in half my headphone.
And half a headphone's better than none. Uh-huh. We are having some technical difficulties this morning. Do bear with us. Linda, are you there?
I sure am.
All righty.
Excellent.
I've been listening to you guys for going, no, I'm here.
We believe that the phones are acting a little screwy this morning. And sometimes, you know, it's just the technology gods are not with us right now. But hopefully they will.
But here you are and we're good.
They will smile upon us throughout the morning anyway. Thank you so much for joining us, Linda. Linda Tirado, author of Hand to Mouth, Living in Bootstrap America, and oh, so many essays and tweets before and after that book. Thank you so much. We were just talking about the blame that that has been thrown on the working class, the working poor, for the selection of Trump. And, you know, in my mind, I would look at, say, vote theft, electoral corruption, and possible hacks from foreign countries as, I would say, more likely candidates for allowing that selection to take place. Also, there's the incredible non-mandate of less than a quarter of the voting populace actually voting for him. But through all of that, we hear blame being thrown on the poor. And I just sort of want to start our conversation with, how does that sit with you? Do you think that the poor actually turned out en masse to elect this billionaire?
Well, my reaction is actually unprintable and unerrable. But
do the best you can, Linda. Yeah.
What we know actually for sure is that Trump's voters actually skewed wealthier than not. More poor people that voted for Trump than for Hillary. But that's extrapolating a lot to find blame. And the reason that we do that is it's just easy to, you know, blame the uneducated, poor Appalachian rednecks who are bent on destroying the country. But it's a really facile explanation. The reason people are talking about populism this time around is because Bernie and Trump both did well. The majority of Americans actually are just kind of like, this status quo isn't working for us. We don't want the machine candidates. And that was the populist event that happened this year. But to blame the election of Donald Trump on the poor and working classes in this country is to overlook the fact that the entire Republican Party kind of bowed out before him, that the media gave him more free airtime than he could have paid for. I mean, no matter how rich he is or isn't, he doesn't have that kind of money. And so when you get to looking at those things, it's really a question of, are you going to blame the people individually for systemic problems? And every time we blame the poor, that's exactly what we're doing.
And yet blaming the poor is something that we're so used to in this country, right? Got some social ills? Well, it must be because the poor are, you know, sucking at the public trough and draining us of the monies that could be spent on war and stuff, you know, because we're funding food programs, we're funding health programs, right?
In bailouts, if we stopped paying for welfare,
right? That's sort of
that little teeny piece of the pie that goes for social services, yeah.
Right, and of course that does always overlook the fact that far more money goes to corporate welfare, and far more money goes to corporate bailouts and tax loopholes than ever support the working class or the poor.
Well, and I also was hearing from certain people I know about the willful ignorance of how stupid people were to vote for Trump. And you know, I didn't particularly think that Hillary Clinton was going to solve anybody's problems either. But the stupidity of these people. And I'm like, ooh.
Well, you know what's interesting to me is we live in a country where we've been systematically cutting history and civics education for the last 30 or 40 years. We've been undermining all of our civic institutions. We have allowed, you know, essentially fake news is what they're calling it now. But Fox News and conservative talk radio pretty much have a lock on a bunch of the country. The Democrats gave up the heartland, you know, ages ago. You had Howard Dean, 10 years ago, begging them to do a 50-state strategy.
Right.
And then after 30 years of propaganda and misinformation, everybody's shocked somehow that we don't have an educated voter populace. And what's interesting to me most about that is that if you're going to call people uneducated and stupid, then you can't then hold them accountable for whatever decision they made because they're uneducated and stupid. You can't have that argument both ways. So this argument that, you know, it's these uneducated, stupid people that went out of their way to you know, hurt everybody because they thought it through that much. That's not, you can't
do that, and it doesn't seem to stop people. But the actual problem that we've got here is that we don't, as Americans, actually agree on what America is or what truth is. I mean, right now we've got private citizens this election. We're having to kind of parse out which intelligence community they believe the most.
Right. What did Stephen Colbert call it? Truthiness.
Yes. Yes. And, you know, look, I am not qualified to do intel briefings or to decide what they mean. But for some reason, this is what's being put in front of us. And when people voted for Trump, I think a lot of folk that comment and make that commentary really don't understand what the media environment is for a lot of Trump's voters. Like, these are folk who have only heard about Hillary's emails, and they've heard about, you know, you've got people that are walking into pizzerias thinking
right.
that there's child
sex
ring.
Say, yes, with guns.
Right, and you can blame people for being that gullible, but propaganda is actually really, really subtle, and it does not take much to become propagandized, and you don't mm-hmm. have to be stupid to be susceptible to propaganda.
No,
and I think that's the reasoning that people miss. They think that if you've been suckered in by propaganda, you must be an idiot. And that is just not true through all of human history. Plenty of populations have been suckered in.
We've had some pretty good propaganda in this country for a long time.
Hmm?
We've had some pretty good propaganda in the United States for a long time that, you know, the pull yourself up by your own bootstraps.
Sort of
Horatio
propaganda.
Alger propaganda.
And the thing about propaganda
yeah.
is that it works. I mean, yeah, you don't have to be gullible. It propaganda, there's some science behind it. You know, there's ways to manipulate opinion. And, you know, it's the work of advertisers everywhere, right? And sometimes,
I think that the critique of stupidity is actually an indicator that you haven't thought it through very much. For that very reason, because we are all propagandized, and for the reason that you say, like, for the ads alone, we all buy particular brands of things. Why is that? Well, because we've been told to over the course of years,
mm-hmm.
not because they're not necessarily any better. And when we have a populace that's primed for that sort of advertising and that sort of messaging, to see it used in a political context isn't shocking at all. What's shocking to me, actually, is it took us so long to get a Trump.
Right. That's a fair point. I want to invite our listeners to join in the conversation this morning, and we pray the phones will support that. 503-231-8187 is the number to call to join us on air in this conversation this morning. I'm Ani.
I'm Lynn.
And we are speaking with Linda Tirado. We would also encourage you to follow along in the Twitterverse. You can follow us at Positive Revolt. You can also like our page on Facebook, where you can find us Positively Revolting.
And you can follow Linda Tirado with, I think, one of the best Twitter handles, at Killer Martinis.
Oh, yeah, I nailed that one.
You did. I love that.
And congratulations to you. I actually... your tweets are wonderful, and you are just about my favorite person to follow in the Twitterverse. And because you actually, you're astute, and also you have humor, and I think it's a great combination. But earlier or late last week, you were tweeting up a storm about the phrase "the white working class," which is suddenly being put out there as, you know, one of the reasons why Trump was elected. But in fact, that phrase in itself is really problematic. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, there's a few different reasons. To begin with, it assumes that white people think of themselves as white, and that was actually a voting issue. Which I think it's a poor descriptor, because people might vote for the systems that work for them, but to assume that you have this monolith of racially motivated voters is not exactly what happens there. The other thing that you've got to think about when you're talking about the white working class is you're talking about millions and millions and millions of people, and you're not talking all city or all rural. You know, it's the demographics are so broad that it's actually a problem to use as a descriptor, because what you're talking about rural white voters, that's a very different population than white city voters, but they most might be working class. So I think that is the problem with white working class generally is that it's just not descriptive enough. It's this huge catch-all that we're using, and then we use it and we say, okay, well, the white working class voted for racism, and then we just kind of stop the conversation there. And it doesn't actually help us get to the root of, well, what kind of racism? Where did people learn that, and how is that going? The other thing I've got a problem with on it is that racism legitimately is a political tool in this country and has been for a very, very long time. And so, again, I think, you're just kind of sweeping it under the rug and not talking about the real problems that we have in this country to just say a bunch of people voted for the dude because he was a racist and call it good. I think that demographically speaking, it's a weak nail to hang your hat on. I don't think it makes a lot of sense in the political context that we're working within, because it's meant to describe a bunch of problematic behaviors, but it doesn't get us any closer to understanding why those behaviors exist and where they're happening and why they continue to exist.
And I see the powers that be as not really caring why, because it works to their favor for people to be uninformed about that sort of thing.
I think that, you know, we have got to grapple with the fact that we've got two parties, actually, who have been quietly selling racism as for political advantage for a very long time. If, you know, the big hit on Hillary was her super predators comment, and everybody goes, oh, she's evolved since then. Well, that's not that long ago in political movement or political thought. So all of those laws are just now starting to kind of show their fruit. Mm-hmm. And I think that when we talk about race in America as it applies to politics, we have got to start understanding that political leaders have systematically told white folk to fear and hate brown people, and they've told brown people to fear and hate white folk with much more reason in most cases.
Oh, really?
But when we've got people selling that division and they're propagandizing us towards that division, you know, a lot of people are going to buy it. And you can't look at people and just say, stop being racist, when it's the system that we teach people over and over and over for electoral effect, for money. I mean, the amount of money made in white flight alone in new house purchases. Like, it's insane the way that we handle it. And to not speak about those real issues, to just kind of write them off with that banner white working class, I think sells out both the thing that we're trying to fix and the problem that we've got.
Absolutely. How do you, as we are looking into, this month and the planned actions that are happening, looking at effective resistance, it's, I'm sorry, there's a, I'm slightly distracted by my own screen popping up messages at me.
Oh.
Hello, my own screen.
Goodness, I will avert my eyes now. But looking at effective resistance, how do you think we can best not go along with the new fascist track that is coming at us?
The answers are really unsatisfying. I'm so sorry for this.
Damn it, Linda, you don't have all the answers.
I know. it actually is as simple as things like keeping a journal. Because, like, every morning, or not every morning, but most mornings on Twitter, I get up and I do kind of a, like, satirical, let's look at how well democracy went yesterday. And we talk about all the things that are not a normal thing to have your children installed in your administration. It's not a normal thing to keep your own private security force. It's not a thing, you know.
To not go to security briefings every day. What a great rebel he is. Huh. I mean, it's so interesting to see the polarization about how people, what people think in this. I was forgetting what the post-truth culture. That's that term scares me more than anything anybody has come up with. Because post-truth, what does that mean? So you are doing a truth diary, a truth
and
journal.
I think everybody should. They should be, you know, noting to themselves when something seems weird, because in a month it won't. It'll seem normal. And going back and being able to refer to those things, be like, oh man, I remember when that was shocking. you know, kind of helps you keep a sense of how absolutely unprecedented all of this is. Second thing I'm telling people, learn things, do history, learn philosophy, get to know the American civic institutions, because we are going to have to rescue this country. The election of Donald Trump, if it showed us nothing else, shows us that our system is fundamentally broken. This is a dude who got two newspaper endorsements, and one of them was a Nazi endorsement. This is a guy who was, until the day before the election, called unfit for office by the leaders of his own party. Paul Ryan wouldn't endorse him, but did tell people to vote for him, right? Like, the system has broken, and now we know it, which means we have a chance to fix it, which is great, but we can't do it with our current level of knowledge and our current knowledge base. We have to understand why the Electoral College exists and how to reform it in a way that makes sense. We have to know what happened exactly in Germany or in Italy or in any of the other places that we've seen, you know, kind of autocracies and kleptocracies come up. What are the historical parallels? Where are the parallels not historical? What can we do about that? And then the last thing that I'm encouraging everybody to do is organize locally. It's lovely to be online. That's where you get your support and everything. Go offline. Meet your neighbors. Get a club together, start gardening, get a babysitting co-op. I don't know and I don't care. But get to know your neighbors and organize locally, because that is the most effective political tool that we have, and it's hugely underutilized.
I quite agree. I've seen this. This is one way that sometimes I think social media is important to help people sort of get together locally, as long as they can get together face to face.
Yeah, I think, you know, we've really kind of gotten into this silos of information. And I can't say enough.
I love that. Silos of information, yes.
Coming from a rural area and living in a city, right? And I've kind of been all over the country in the last couple of years, and I've talked to all sorts of people. And what I can tell you is that most people are decent people who want basically the same things. We have all been told that's not true, so that we'll vote for our guys, so that we'll have that knee-jerk, no, I hate you, you're worthless, you're not a human being even. And we think that the other side thinks that about us. But we only think it about them because we think they think it about us. At some point, we've got to break that cycle. Getting to know your neighbors and people who aren't exactly like you and don't like your music and don't like your pop, you know, all of these things is how you, you know, be a full human being. You don't just talk to folk who already agree with you, although that's fun and it's soothing. And I encourage people to have, you know, groups that they feel comfortable in. But get out of that every now and again. Go meet real people.
Going to meet real people. That's actually where we, you know, where solidarity comes into play. There's an article I've referred to, I don't know, possibly every week since I first saw it come out in November, and that was How You Can Save, how you can stop tyranny in America. And it's one of the things was to actually go out and talk to the other people you interact with every day. You know, that person you see at the bus stop, the person you buy your mints from at the kiosk, the, you know, all the person that serves you lunch in the cafeteria, that these are the people that actually make up your community, you know, regardless of any social media and your friends around the world, that these are the people that you need to have a sense of. And Snyder, the man that authored the article, goes on to say that this is going to become particularly important in a denunciatory time, right?
Yes.
As you know, 1984 was supposed to be a warning and not a blueprint. And I'm kind of...
Oh, my God, now we're buying telescreens and we named it Alexa and we just, like, put it in our room?
Yep. That is the thing, right?
That's right. I forgot about that.
Ooh. And so, really...
Don't read Orwell, kids. You'll never sleep again.
Well, it was a long time ago, but yeah.
Yeah, and in fact, 1984, well, not only a blueprint, but, you know, they've improved on it, really. And I actually can't recommend people read that strongly enough, as well as The Handmaid's Tale for a little look at Pence, Margaret Atwood's A Handmaid's Tale. With those two dystopian novels, I think we see what is happening quite clearly. So with that, looking at getting to know the people in your area, and not only to organize with, but just again, because as changes occur, you know, if Trump makes good on even a fraction of the, quote, promises, the deportations and the oppressions, they will be affecting people who are in our communities, right? And so it's important to get to know each other. It's important to be able to support each other.
I think what it comes down to, even if we recognize that everybody is frightened, it's fear that motivates decisions like this. And if we made it our mission to make everybody around us a little bit less frightened, you know, I think we'd be doing a lot better. There's something to be said, too, for the last time, when we had a fairly cohesive, stable politics, was also around the time that we had CEOs living in the communities where they ran a business.
Well, or cops were neighborhood cops.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. You had that community in a different sense than you do now. So it's an interesting parallel where you see kind of the fracturing of American communities, and at the same time, you see the fracturing of the politics, where it became a lot more partisan. And I mean, Tip O'Neill, it would be unheard of nowadays.
Well, I've been reading a book Starhawk wrote about 25 years ago. It's called there's two of them, the fifth sacred thing. But one of the things they did was try to, and I want to do now, we really need to try to find a different way of talking to people. One of the things they were trying to get an army to sort of, which it reminds me of Standing Rock, getting the police to just give up and finally come on your side. And the end of the sentence was always, there's a place for you at our table. It doesn't mean you get to take over our table, but there's a place for you at our table. And I have found talking with people that I politically seriously disagree with sometimes that, you know, I'm trying to really change how I talk to them and make people feel welcomed instead of like fearful or alienated or that I'm superior somehow because, of course, what I think is right.
Right.
And which may be true, but still.
Yeah. No, there's something to be said, too, for the idea that when you talk to somebody whose experience or whose world is different than your own, if you start by giving them credit for that fact being true,
mm-hmm.
Like, my experience doesn't show me that. I disagree with all of your premises, and I disagree with your outcomes. But I understand that your context is different, your knowledge base is different, your inputs and information are different. So why don't you tell me how you got to where you are? And if you can't have that conversation, you're never going to be able to undo the damage we've done. If you can't talk to somebody who's from Missouri and has never heard anything but Fox News and, you know, Tommy Lahren and all of this whatever, you know, Sean Hannity on the radio and Rush Limbaugh.
Right, which is a hard layer to crack, but...
Right, but if you can't talk to them without letting them tell you what it's like to grow up in that environment, then you're never going to be able to mitigate it for the next generation. Like, we can't fix a problem we can't look at and identify.
Absolutely.
And so this refusal to even have the discussion or for the discussion to be seen as disloyal is a problem because that means you don't care about fixing it. You care about looking like you care.
Well, and people, you know, I'm a big believer in stories. People have stories they want. They have their own stories to tell about their life. But then there's the story sort of view they have about the world.
Yeah.
And you've got to hear that, what that is, before that can either be changed or integrated with your own story.
Yes, and I think the interesting thing for me, and it annoys me more on the left than the right, because I don't hold much, the right doesn't hold these values as their core values of liberality and understanding and knowledge and education, right?
Right.
And so it annoys me more coming from the left. But there's, I think a lot of people right now making a virtue out of ignorance and saying, we don't know and we don't care to know because we know it's wrong and it has wrong outcomes, so the whole thing's wrong. And anyway, if you can't agree with us on that up front, then we can't have a conversation. And that's not how humans work. Like, you can't just go, you're an idiot, now let's have a rational conversation.
Right. Oh, I can't think of anything I'd rather do. Thank you for insulting me. All right, let's go on. Yes.
Right. And you see that so much, where people are like, you know, you people are just idiots and uneducated and bigoted and backwards and da 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 da. Why won't you guys just sit down and have a reasonable conversation? Why are you always yelling at us? I'm like, well, let me explain this one to you, sweetie. And I think it's really counterproductive, but more, I think it's actually hurting the country. I think it's hurting the country more than anything else at the moment, that the vanguard of understanding and reason and education and progress are behaving like a bunch of petulant children. Like, I understand people who are frightened. I understand people who are worried. I understand people who are angry. And I don't think everybody has the job of education. But I do think that just calling the other half of the country a bunch of morons that aren't even worth the air they breathe is not a good way to get back to a politics that works for everybody.
No, not in your outside voice.
Nor is it going to solve any of the problems.
Not in your outside voice. You just can't do that.
Right.
We occasionally can think it. Yeah. I know.
Well, I think even when we think it, it's really not good, right? Polarization is not okay.
It's true.
But at the same time, looking at reconciliation without actually underscoring what's at stake and what are we reconciling for, like what are we reconciling towards and around, is also dangerous. You know, the idea.
No, I think there needs to be that conversation. Look, you can have a conversation, and I do this actually pretty frequently in my work as a journalist. You go talk to people who have beliefs that you find repellent and abhorrent, but instead of having an argument over how, you know, abhorrent they are, you say, how did you come to form these beliefs? Because then I can start to undo them. Because then I can say, oh, that never happened, actually, or you heard that wrong. And once you start to change people's, you know, frameworks and their knowledge base, that's where beliefs change. You can't have a fight with somebody about a thing that they feel to be true. They feel it to be true, period, the end. But if you can get down to those brass tacks, you can start to change the minds. I don't think that having a big tent means that you should have to, you know, be courting racists. And I think maybe this is what you were talking about me saying last week. I don't believe that to win the white working class, you have to court racists. What I think you have to do is say, right, how many of you guys were taught racism? We're going to unteach it. And then the ones that are left, they're a problem. You got to deal with them. But if you start with, you have had some wrong knowledge given to you, that's a much better premise for change.
Right. And I think that this is, in fact, super important work for white folks to be engaging in right about now, right?
I don't think it's actually the job of anybody but white people. Like, look, we've been sitting down on this job, and it's gotten bad, and we were able to ignore it because it wasn't bad enough and it hadn't hit us yet. And now it has, and we're all losing our damn minds. I mean, we're incapable, we're not dealing with it, and what we need to be doing is having an internal public conversation of, right, guys, how did we get here, and how do we, you know, move away from this, because we can't do this again. I have far too many Muslim friends. I have far too many Black friends. My friends are scared out of their minds, and they've got reason to be.
Absolutely.
We cannot do this to our countrymen again.
Absolutely. And again, so that's, I mean, that's been my problem with that whole let's all get along and reconcile, you know, well, we might not have voted for him. Well, we might not like him, but now he's our president. How can we, try to make it through this next 4 years without causing civil unrest? I don't think that that's an appropriate premise to start from. And because, civil unrest, I think, is kind of going to be the order of the day as long as we have an administration that is promoting such abhorrent and repellent policies.
I'd hope so.
You know,
I mean, I'd hope we're that good. Yeah. I don't know. I don't know that I necessarily even believe that we've got it in us right now, because just the way the electorate is and the situation we do find ourselves in. But I hope that, you know, everybody is just refusing to go along with this. We've already made Congress not do that stupid ethics thing by just flooding their offices. It's possible if we sustain the effort, but we're going to have to get organized, and we're going to have to start speaking honestly about a bunch of stuff we don't want to. We're going to have to talk about money, religion, and politics all through dinner and refuse to be moved. And if we don't get rude, and if we don't get annoying, and if we don't get uncouth, then we're going to continue with the same problems that we've got now. I got no problem talking to racists. I've got no problem even being nice to racists. But there's a difference between saying I accept and understand what you believe and saying I understand that you believe it. You do not have to accept something to understand that it exists and understand how it came to exist. And I think people are really afraid of walking up to that line and hitting it wrong. And the answer to that is don't allow racism. Don't allow any ism. If somebody said something, tell them they said it and that you won't hear it around you.
Mm-hmm.
But then talk to them about how they came to that belief.
Mm-hmm. It's, you know, in my own life as a person who believes strongly and has worked for social justice, I don't know, for a long time, let's just say since I was a teenager, that in my 20s, if I heard something, one of those isms, I would usually decry it pretty loudly, usually in a room full of people, and usually with words that I can't say on the air. Oh, you, expletive delete here, racist pig. I can't even believe the expletive delete here that fell out your mouth. Have you listened to yourself? You know, and I found over some years that actually did nothing to help that person move out of their position.
Alienation did nothing?
It kind of maybe entrenched them, and so they would maybe not participate in the groups I was in, which might have been okay for me, but not okay for social change as a whole, right? And certainly, if we're really trying to win hearts and minds, it was a total fail. Now, again, exactly what you're saying, to actually listen to the words that somebody is saying and start unpacking it with them, because people do things that make sense to them, right? And if people hold these beliefs, just like you've been saying, we've been carefully taught to be separate and to keep each other very compartmentalized. And if we need to be in a position up, then we need to have people in positions below us. And, the social order, the institutionalized racism, sexism, homophobia, all of it comes into play there. So actually,
I think the other thing, too, is that we are going to have to step up more than we're realizing. Nothing that we've done so far has worked, or we wouldn't have found ourselves here. So the things we've been doing are probably not going to be the things that we need to do to get ourselves out of this. And if there's one thing, I mean, look, I was raised to be fairly racist. I was raised in a white state with a major religion that only let black people hold the priesthood in 1978 because they were going to lose their tax status. Like, that's where I'm from. I actually went to a segregationist academy in my elementary school years. Mm-hmm. And so coming out of that and learning how to deprogram that stuff out of myself and understanding where it came from, the thing that actually got me to reject that entire worldview was when I found a place that I could guarantee it wasn't true. Because it turns out I'm not all the way straight. And everything they said about gay people wasn't true. So then what if it also isn't true about Black people? What right. if it also isn't true? And so once that happened, it was a lot easier for me to deprogram. But getting to that moment of just trying to get somebody to go, hey, this doesn't make sense. Whatever it is, this little thing, it doesn't make sense. And if it doesn't make sense, then there's a place that you can start talking about, like, well, why do you believe that? Where does this come from? Most of the Trump voters that I talked to actually didn't buy most of his rhetoric. They don't think he's going to actually make Mexico pay for the wall.
He just said that to stir up the conversation, is how what a lot of them seem to believe. He just said it. He's never going to do those things. I'm like, ooh.
You know, the best articulation I've heard of it from a Trump voter so far, and it's a woman around my age that lives in Missouri. She said, he knows how to win this war. He knew how to get himself elected. He does reality TV, and that's all politics is now anyway. So he's going to do whatever he's got to do to get himself elected. But then I expect him to do X and Y and Z, all based on his previous statements before he was a candidate, which was so fascinating to me. Like, that's actually a heck of a media critique right there, right?
Yeah.
Like, and I almost, like, I'm pushing back at her, and I'm like, but. And she goes, no, that's the thing. Politics is broken. Media is broken. He did what he needed to do to win because he can't do anything until you're in office. And I went, that's actually super logical. Like, I don't even know what to do with that. And she could kind of toss off all of the over-the-top stuff and the racism and the sexism and the misogyny and all of that but we celebrate that in pop culture. We celebrate people that do that. Why would he not do that? Like, what do you mean? And okay,
fair point.
That's also a fair point.
Yeah, I mean, that we do live in rape culture, and that we are now electing a man who basically admits to sexually assaulting women and thinking that's great. And I guess is actually thing, does make
I
some
mean,
sense.
Listen to Peter King or Ted Cruz or Marco Rubio or anybody yeah. talk about Islam. I mean, yeah. Donald Trump isn't even the most anti-Muslim Republican.
No, that's true.
Like, we talk about him in isolation because he got all of this stuff, but the wall wasn't his idea. The wall has been around for a long time, and, right. and that's basically a Republican plank. The only thing that he actually brought us that was new was the, you know, grab him by the words that I'm not even sure I can say on air.
Yeah, I don't think we can.
Nope.
And
not in that context, anyway.
Right. And as far as, you know, that goes, there have been plenty of Democrats with sex scandals who treated women terribly or, mm-hmm. or were sexual predators. So what part of Trump is actually not just an amalgamation of the politics we already had? What about him is so bad, except for that he actually just held a mirror up and went, no, America, that's pretty much what it is.
Well,
I'm going to go ahead and throw in a comment from one of our listeners. The phone gods, the technology gods, well, apparently somebody didn't leave the offering. I don't know. But it's they are not with us this morning. So we can't actually invite other folks on the air with us to join the conversation. But what we can do is relay some messages. So somebody has called to ask us to say their opinion, which is if we don't have the conversation with our coworkers that the problem is billionaires and oligarchs, then the racists will have the conversation that the problem is immigrants and the poor.
And that's so, dead on.
Yeah. I thank that listener for calling in with that very astute statement.
You know, an interesting thread from that, too, is there's this kind of fight on the left right now of is it class or is it intersectional racism and gender stuff and all of that. And I think it's a waste of time to have that fight because you yeah. cannot extrapolate them.
Right. It is all very interconnected.
Yeah, absolutely. Because, racism wouldn't exist if poor white people didn't exist. Or rather, it would, but not in the structural sense that we get used to it, because there just wouldn't be a whole bunch of people feeling so precarious that they'd be looking for somebody to blame or easy prey for people who wanted to put somebody to blame in front of them. And without that it's where we talk about, you know, kind of the economic problems, and that's really what's underpinning it. it's everything. And you can't take one away from the other. I wrote a piece in The Guardian about how when I think about economic insecurity, I know a lot of people think of like an angry, toothless white dude who's mad that like some woman or somebody of color got a job over them. But the example I give is in the town I live in, it's right over the river from another town. So there's a bridge that connects them. And Walmart wanted to come to the town that I live in. And the residents said, no, absolutely not, because we want to keep our downtown, our local stores. So Walmart went literally directly over the river. Like, you would run into the Walmart if you kept driving off the bridge. And all of that tax revenue now goes over the river into West Virginia. And all of those jobs are gone, and all of those stores are still gone. So economic insecurity, as I define it, is when you try to show some control, and it doesn't matter what you want, because the multinational is going to do what it wants anyway. And if you fight, you wind up being hurt worse. And that's what I think a lot of people don't understand about a lot of rural voters, is that those are the experiences they vote on.
Hmm. Again, fair point. We have just about 3 minutes left. And so to sum up, I guess I want to just say, first, thank you for joining us. And do you have any final thoughts that you want to leave us with?
I do. You can't avert things like fascism or kleptocracy or totalitarianism unless you look for them, unless you actively try to keep them from happening. It's not crazy to talk about things. It's not crazy to talk about the world and how insane it is right now. Don't feel like you're the crazy one for noticing that none of this is normal. Get ready for it to keep not being normal, and get ready to actually make America actually great, which if Donald Trump has done anything for America, he might actually force us to be our best selves, where we wouldn't have before. And if there's any silver lining, it might be that.
That is, in fact, the silver lining I was talking about yesterday. People have commented for years that I'm kind of eternally optimistic. I hardly Rebecca of Sunnybrook Farm. I mean, I'm not really Pollyanna, but I do try to find, you know, a positive outcome for even fairly dire situations. And actually, I can see that as being, it's too high a price. I'm going to go ahead and put that out there first. But I can see that as developing solidarity, developing shared praxis, I think can be a strength that we see coming out of this.
I mean, if we're going to get stuck with like a giant orange man anyway, we might as well improve the country.
I think he's an Oompa Loompa at heart, just really. I'm going there. Linda Tirado, thank you so very much for joining us this morning. You too. We hope to talk to you again soon. It's been a couple years, and let's not have it be that long again, and hopefully the phones will work better next time.
Anytime, ladies.
Thank you so much.
Excellent. Take care.
Bye.
And with that, like sands through the hourglass, so go the talk shows of our lives. Again, to remind you, coming right up at 9 o'clock this morning, Peace Talk Radio, special coverage of Neuroscience of Peacemaking, How Meditative Practices Help School Kids, the humanitarian work of Doctors Without Borders, racial justice, and more. 10 o'clock, Air Cascadia with Chris Andre. 10:15, it's Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein. At 11 o'clock, A Radio Geekly, a fantastic new show, continuing its series on gatekeeping. This week, the oppression of the LGBTQ community in geek culture. I gotta say, geek culture is one of the more accepting communities I personally have found, and yet it's still there. Strangely enough, not without its own issues in homophobia. So I look forward to that conversation. I also want to thank all people listening who are KBOO members. And again, if you have not joined KBOO, if you are not financially supporting this independent media resource, please take care of that situation right now. You'll feel better about yourself. So will we. You can become a KBOO member by going to kboo.fm and clicking on donate. Thanks very much. We'll be back next week with more Ways of Resistance on Positively Revolting.
Indeed.
Every thought will tell the world how you
cast your vote.
In Oregon, a person with mental illness can be charged with a nonviolent crime and end up in a jail cell for months in a deteriorating mental state and without restorative treatment. Tune into Prison Pipeline on January 9th to hear Disability Rights Oregon's proposed legislation that will help people with mental illness who become entangled with the criminal justice system. That's Prison Pipeline, January 9th at 6:30 p.m.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of First 100 Days, United in Resistance. First 100 Days is a resource to support creative resistance to the Trump regime and takes place January 14th and 15th at the Portland Institute for Contemporary Art. There will be workshops on preparing for protests, interrupting oppression, creative protest tactics, and more, with the goal of strengthening our communities by channeling outrage into dynamic projects based on a deeper analysis of anti-colonial, anti-capitalist, anti-racist, and feminist histories. Again, that's First 100 Days, January 14th and 15th, at the Portland Institute for Contemporary Art, 415 Southwest 10th Avenue, Suite 300 in Portland. More information on the event can be found at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
And this is KBOO Portland. It's 9:01 a.m. And coming up is Peace Talk Radio. We have a special program covering the neuroscience of peacemaking.